Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, February 28th, 2013. I'm Holly Keen, and this is Raven News. Extending Sitka's seasonal sales tax for another 2 years is one step closer to the October ballot. Right now, the sales tax in Sitka is 5% from October through April and 6% from May through September. The extra 1% point is set to expire in 2022. But the Assembly on Tuesday advanced a measure that would change the sunset date to 2024. If it goes to the ballot and voters say yes, the two school bond projects from 1996 would be repaid from the sales tax money instead of from the city's general fund. That would free up some money for other needs in the budget. Assembly members Tor Christensen and Mike Reif proposed the idea. Here's Reif.
And it is going to give us a little more money in the general fund, $380,000. And our budgets are awfully tight, and that is going to be used, and we don't know exactly how, but it's going to be used for both the general fund and the school districts.
The measure gained easy and fast approval. Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett called it a great idea.
Not only does it free up money in the general fund, it also makes sense to have all the school projects in the same place. It makes it much more understandable for everybody. And I think it really shocked me in reading through this that it would only cost sunsetting 2 years later.
No one testified on the matter. The proposal to extend the seasonal sales tax gets one more hearing at the Assembly's March 12th meeting. If the Assembly gives it the green light, the measure moves to the October ballot for approval by voters. State and federal officials say they are looking at a variety of options for improving transportation to and from the city of Cake, a community of about 600 people on northwest Kuprianoff Island. The effort was prompted by the state's plan for a road and ferry crossing to connect Cake and Petersburg. However, now that the environmental study is getting underway, the Federal Highway Administration and the Alaska Department of Transportation are no longer calling it a road project. Rather, they say it's an access project. As Matt Lichtenstein reports, the agencies held a meeting to gather initial public input in Petersburg last week.
It was an informal three-hour open house at the Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall. Over the course of the evening, roughly 15 to 20 area residents stopped by, checked out the maps, and chatted individually with government planners and their consultants. It was the state's plans for a road connection between Petersburg and Cake that got this ball rolling. However, the project involves some federal money and would cross federal land, so the Federal Highway Administration is in charge of an environmental impact statement. The EIS is a key requirement of the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and Federal Highways project manager Michael Trefalis was careful to point out that the scope would not be limited to just a road.
When the federal government was asked to come in and study the project, we want to take a step back, and we wanted to rename it Cake Access, mainly because we want to identify what are the needs for Cake. Do they have transportation access issues now? We don't know. That's why we're out here in a scoping process.
There were maps spread out on the tables displaying five preliminary alternatives, options for building roads, increasing ferry service, or a combination of the two. One of those options is a 45-mile road along the north end of Kuprianoff. That's been the preferred choice for the Alaska Department of Transportation, which secured $40 million in legislative funding for a one-lane gravel road last year. The appropriation did not include money for the ferry crossing that would be needed to reach Petersburg. In its legislative funding request and on its website, Alaska DOT proposed a road on the north end of Kuprianoff to improve transportation for Cake and to help reduce maintenance costs for a potential electrical intertie to Petersburg. Consultants for the U.S. Forest Service are conducting a completely separate EIS for the proposed Cake-Petersburg electrical intertie. Trefalis said the route that's chosen for that project could affect the Cake Access EIS, but they are independent projects.
We're going to be looking at the intertie project under a cumulative effects section of our document. So if the intertie decides to build on alignment X and we pick alignment Y, we have to look at the combined effect of both projects and assess that in our environmental document.
Besides the northern route, the only other potential corridor that both projects have in common starts further to the south. It would begin across from Petersburg at a Kuprianoff Island log transfer facility called Tonka and run along old logging roads and forest land. It would require two water crossings to reach Cake, where the northern route would require one. However, the northern route could mean putting a road, power line, and ferry terminal in the small, roadless community of Kuprianoff. The city of about 30 people has passed a resolution opposing it. That's one of the reasons the northern route is controversial in the Petersburg area, where some residents have also raised concerns over impacts on the viewshed, as well as nearby Petersburg Creek. Kuprinoff Mayor Danatinas was among those who stopped by the open house.
My community right now is hoping for the Tonka route, the southern route, and if that is not an option, you know, by and by, then we'd like a route that does not come into our city limits. That's what we're hoping for.
The maps showed two other potential routes heading from Cake to Totem and Cochise Bays on southern Kuprinoff. From there, travelers would link up with ferry connections to the Prince of Wales, Mitkoff, or Wrangell Island road systems. Federal Highways had planned to hold a meeting in Cake the following day, but ended up postponing it. While the agency is focused on transportation for this study, getting access to cheaper hydroelectric power from Petersburg has long been the top priority for Cake. As far as the transportation access project, Mayor Henrich Kadake said the following week by phone that he'd prefer a road that could be used to maintain an intertie.
Right now, you know, I don't know how far they want to go with it, but I am really looking for access just so that our intertie could go alongside it and where we don't have to pay so much for maintenance of it.
The draft EIS for the electrical intertie is expected to be out to the public sometime this spring. A draft EIS for the Cake Access Project is not slated to be done until the fall of 2014 in Petersburg. I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
A proposed monument in Juneau to Japanese Americans interned in World War II got a big boost last weekend. The Gastineau Channel Historical Society donated $5,000 to the Empty Chair Project, and a fundraising concert raised nearly $2,000. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, organizers have been collecting funds for about a year and need about $6,000 more to meet their $4,000 goal.
Third-generation Japanese-American violinist Steve Tada and pianist Nancy Nash perform composer Michio Miyagi's Haru no Umi at the Empty Chair Benefit Concert on Saturday. Sisters Mary Tanaka Abo and Alice Tanaka Hikido sat in the front row as honored guests. Alice Tanaka was 9 years old in 1942 when the entire family was taken from Juneau and placed into internment camps.
We were identified with the enemy when we were not the enemy at all.
Brother John Tanaka, who died several years ago, inspired the Empty Chair Project. He was valedictorian of Juneau High School's class of 1942, but could not attend graduation after the family was taken from the capital city. The school set up an empty chair at the ceremony to acknowledge that John Tanaka was not there. The memorial will be a slightly larger than life-size bronze replica of the empty chair at Juneau's Capital School Park, located next to the old Juneau High School. Project organizer Margie Shackelford has been friends with Mary Tanaka since childhood.
We can't always redress everything, but we can at least acknowledge that an injustice occurred.
The Tanaka's father, Shonosuke, operated the City Cafe in downtown Juneau for more than 50 years. In the early 1940s, the territorial capital was home to about 6,000 residents, and the restaurant was open 24 hours a day to serve miners, fishermen, and other laborers. Alice recalls that federal agents came for her father just a day after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in December 1941.
They took all the men, actually. It wasn't just my father, but all the immigrant-born men. Then shortly after that, they were taken away from Juneau. We didn't know where they were going to be taken to, so there's a lot of unknown.
While their father was interned in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the Tanaka children and their mother were sent to Camp Minidoka in Idaho, where they would spend the next 3 years.
It was a small room that we shared with a potbelly stove, and that was our home for the duration of the war. And then we had all our meals in the mess hall, did all our showering and bathroom needs in what they called the laundry room. So it was kind of a communal kind of a living.
Violinist Tada, whose family lived in the Seattle area, had relatives taken to Camp Minidoka as well.
They published what was called a memory book, and it has group photos of everybody's family in front of their barracks. It kind of reads like a school yearbook. I mean, they had social clubs, tried to have dance bands and morale builders, and they even had Boy Scout troops.
After the war, the Tanakas returned to Juneau, where Alice says her father reopened the City Cafe with community support.
He had to take a loan out from the bank, and the bank gave him the loan unconditionally. And suppliers were family friends that told my father that he didn't have to pay his bills until he had a cash flow that made it possible.
Seattle artist Peter Raquem has a design concept for the Empty Chair Memorial. Shackelford says it will include the names of all the Japanese Americans taken from Juneau during World War II.
Plus a Japanese symbol for remembrance and memory, and a text telling the story of the empty chair.
With the funds raised at the benefit concert, organizers are confident they'll be able to dedicate the memorial in the summer of 2014. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The judge in the John Marvin Jr. case has turned down a request for a new trial, which could have led to a shorter sentence for the murder of two Hoonah police officers. Sitka Superior Court Judge David George on Thursday declined to set aside earlier findings that one of the Hoonah police officers was actually in performance of his official duties when he was shot over 2 years ago. Judge George also denied a companion motion for a new trial to determine whether Sergeant Anthony Wallace was actually engaged in the performance of those duties when he was chatting with a colleague's children on Front Street in Hoonah. Public defender Eric Headland filed the motions following last November's trial, in which Marvin was convicted in the murder of Wallace and Officer Matthew Tokuoka. Both were killed during the shooting in August 2010. Marvin could be sentenced to anywhere from 20 to 99 years for Tokuoka's murder, but a straight 99 years for Wallace's murder, because the sentence for a first-degree murder of a peace officer is defined in statute. That was a portion of the sentence that Headland was trying to get reduced with a new trial to determine the Wallace's status. Wallace, although in uniform, was socializing with the Tokuoka family at the time of the shooting. Headland argues that was not part of his official duties. Marvin's sentencing is still scheduled for April 5th. And that's all for Raven News. You can find more of our stories on kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW Sitka.